holding on Pevel on the bays by the first Mishnah, about a third of the way down the Omud. Okay. Mishnah says, if somebody sets up his wife as a storekeeper, so he has goods, and then he arranges that she's going to be minding the store. Or he set her up as an apotropia, as a female of apotropia, as a feminine of apotropos, like a trustee, a caretaker, that she has free right to manage his property. Then whenever he wants, he can make her take a shavua that she didn't keep anything illegally for herself. Which this is a general concept, and there's a general concept in Mishnah Shavuos called Shavuos HaShutvin. And Midrabanan, you have two people have a partnership. One of them may have not even necessarily a definite claim. He may just he's not certain whether the other guy was only taking his fair share. And so he's entitled to make him swear in Beis Din that he in fact only took his fair share. So this is the same kind of thing.
But sort she's of, an employee, right?
Well, she's an employee, but it's a similar idea.
Right.
Yeah. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm not feeling pilcha v'ali sasa. Rabbi Eliezer says even he can make her swear over, for example, the spinning. Over the spinning that she did, or over the dough that she made, in other words, regular household expenses that and things that she usually does. As we learned in a previous parak, usually a woman's job in the house is to spin and bake bread and whatever. This is part of Ma'aseh Yadav. The husband, Rabbi Eliezer says, is entitled to make her swear that she dealt with that honestly and didn't keep anything for herself that she wasn't supposed to.
This is
Midrabanan. Yeah. So the first question the Gemara asks, the Boilah, Rabbi Eliezer, I did Yugo Kamar, El Hachila Kamar. Are we saying that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that directly the husband is able to actually take his wife to Beis Din and tell her, swear that you, when it comes to the wool or whatever that you spun, that you didn't keep any of it for yourself, that you gave it all into the household purse? Or does he mean that he can only make her swear it through Gilgul Shavur? Gilgul Shavur is a concept we talked about previously. I think we had something about it in Yevamos. Actually, those of us who are learning Sota nowadays for Sfira came up the other day, that we actually learned it from Sota, that when you can have a claim which is too weak for somebody to be able to make somebody else swear about it and based in, but once you're having them swear about a stronger claim, then you can also include in it this weaker claim. We learn from the Sota that she has to answer to the Kohen, Amen, Amen, and we learn among other things, double Amen means that not only she's accepting the Shavua, that she wasn't the Zana with this guy who she suspects of being with, the one who the husband warned her about, but also with anybody else. And also that when she was in Arusa, Shemeres Yavam. So that's the kind of thing. And so there's an example where, by itself, the husband wouldn't have the right to bring her to Beis Din or to the Beis Mikdash for a Sota or whatever, and make her swear that she was in Izana with some other person who we never suspected of her before. But once he's already in a position where he can make her swear that she wasn't Mizana with this guy that he warned her about, then already he can include other cases also. This is called Gilgul Shavua. So the question is Rabbi Eliezer saying that the husband is entitled to make his wife swear just one day out of the blue he can take her to Beis Din? I want you to swear that all the spinning wool that you did, that you didn't keep any of it for yourself, or any money that was earned from that. Or does it mean if he's bringing her to Beis Din to make her swear the Shavuot HaShutvin because he had her as a storekeeper or what have you, then or whatever other reason, then he can also include this. Then he can also include this kind of thing.
Can you close the book, please?
Then he can also include this kind of thing. Toshma, Amr Lele Rabbi Eliezer. Well, we see a Braisa.
Is that right up to Mishnah?
Yeah. Toshma. And Pevav Amr Beis, yeah. Toshma, Amr Lele Rabbi Eliezer. Well, we see the Chachamim answered Rabbi Eliezer. You can't do that. Ain't other Narim Nachash B'Kfifa. You can't expect a person to live together with a snake in one basket. Meaning, and we've had this expression a few times before, that you can't live with somebody unpredictable like that. So what does that mean? If you're saying that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that at any time he can choose, hello, to make her swear on these things. And okay, that's why the Chachamim are saying to him, look, you can't have that at any time, out of the blue, he can all of a sudden schlep her to Beis Din for that. Nobody can be expected to live like that. Eli, Amitai de Gilgul, but if you're saying that, even Rabbi Eliezer is only saying that he can do it through Gilgul Shavua, my Nafkalamina. What does she care? It's not a very common... That's the middle of the Amitai. It's not a very common case that he's going to get her into Beis Din to make the shvua about chenvinis or apotropia, because most women, most husbands don't set up their wives as a storekeeper or an apotropa. So therefore, most of the time, it's not going to happen. So one of the if we're saying that Rabbi Eliezer, that even Rabbi Eliezer is only saying you can do these things as gilgul shvua, then what would be their argument to Rabbi Eliezer? You know, darim nachash pitfifa, you can't live with somebody unpredictable like that. If you can only do it with gilgul, getting into this situation of Gilgul was not that common in the first place. Yeah. The answer is no. You could say, given, you could say to Amrulay, no. You could even say, talking about that case, still, she could say, she could argue, given the Kadaikas, Basroi, Kulahai, since you're being so particular with me, Loimatsina de Eder Bahadach, I can't go on living with you. In other words, yes, it may be a very rare situation that he has her in a place where he can make her swear and therefore also include Gilgul Shvua. Still, the Chachamim might be arguing. Still, the Chachamim might be arguing. She would say, okay, it's true. Most of the time, I don't have to worry about this kind of thing, but even the very fact that you seize the opportunity now when you have me in Beis Din for another thing anyway, which maybe it would be reasonable enough to make me swear on that because I'm an apotropa or whatever, and you're meanwhile trying to also make me include in my oath that I was honest with my spinning, that's too much. I can't live with a person like that. So you still don't have a proof one way or the other. Toshma, come, let's bring a proof from a braisa that spells out the situation more clearly. Hello. Harei shalai poter es ishtem in a neder meshvua. If you have a husband who did not give his wife a tour from a neder shvua, which we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah, just like the first Mishnah of our parak talks about cases where the husband waived his rights to the payrus or Yerusha or what have you, the same way the next Mishnah is going to talk about cases where the husband waives his right to a shvua. So if he didn't do that, and then he set her up as a storekeeper, a shemina apotropia, or he set her up as an administrator of his property. How does a mashpia called mantra yirtza? Then, like our Mishnah said, he can make her swear on at any time he wants, because that's shvuas hashukim. Loi hashiva chenvenis. What if he did not set her up as a storekeeper? Loi mina apotropia, and he did not set her up as a manager. Eni yochal hashpia. Then he's not able to make her swear on anything. And here comes in Rabbi Eliezer, Oimer, Afal Pishlo Yeshiva Chenvenis, Loimina Apotropia, Harez Mashpia, called Mancha Yurtsa. Still, Rabbi Eliezer is saying he can make her swear anytime he wants. She'em Loch Isha, Shloy Nafis Apotropia, Shoy Achas Machaya Baila, Al Pilcha Bali Sosa. Because every woman, at least for a short amount of time, is basically an overseer, a manager of the household affairs, of what she spins with her spindle and the dough she makes and the dough she bakes. So Rabbi Eliezer is arguing, you're telling me, Chachamim, that because she's an apotropia, therefore you have a right to make her swear, Shavuot HaShukvin. Very well, every woman in her day-to-day household management is an apotropia over what's going on in the house.
In other words, the Chachamim is saying you have to be an express apotropia.
Wait.
And Rabbi Eliezer, up here, it says it's implied. It's
well, yeah. So therefore, Omrullah, and here is where the Chachamim answered him, no, enodim nodim nachash b'kfifa, a person can't be expected to live with a snake in a basket, you can't live with somebody who's gonna be so suspicious of you all the time. Shema min l'chatchila, which implies, therefore, that Rabbi Eliezer is saying, when he's not just saying as a matter of Gilgul Shavua, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that yes, because a woman who sits in the house and spins, or bakes dough or whatever, is an apotropa over that particular household, over that particular item in the household budget. Therefore, yeah, they're a de facto apotropa. Therefore, you can make her swear, just like you, Chacham, agree that if he actually explicitly appointed her an apotropa, then you can. Shmamina, good. So that proves it. That's what Rabbi Eliezer holds, and the Chachamim obviously are arguing with him. Now, it means for the Shah Achas that she's working on it until she finishes it and hands it over to the husband to sell it or whatever. During that Shah Achas, yeah.
She's still an apotropos,
right? Okay. Rashi and Tosfos discuss the question, so what are the Chachamim saying? Are we saying that because the whole Shavua here is Derabanan, therefore you can't do Gilgul Shavua, because you can only do Gilgul Shavua when the original Shavua was Deraisa? Or is it that they're saying, because of the Ein Adam Darim Nachash B'Tfifa, that it doesn't matter whether it's Daraisa or Darabanan, either way? But actually, the Rishonim disagree on the question. At the end of the day, let's say, for example, if the husband, at the end of the day, what are the Chachamim saying? Are they saying, given that there are cases where even the Chachamim agree he can make her swear, namely if she's a storekeeper or an apotheker, once he has her in Beis Din, for those, is he indeed able to, given that we're establishing that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that L'Hatchila he can make her swear, meaning he can make her swear on those things by themselves, and the Chachamim are disagreeing with him, are they disagreeing with him and saying, therefore he can't even, therefore he can't do it as an independent thing, but he can do it as Gilgul Shavua, or he can't do it at all?
Are we arguing that either...
If we're saying in the end that Rabbi Eliezer holds, that Rabbi Eliezer wants to say that any time, forget about apotropa, the very fact that she's spinning or baking bread is enough to make it that the husband is able to make her swear. And the Chachamim are arguing with him, darim nachash b'kfifa. So what does that mean? Are they saying, therefore, that the husband has no right to ever make her swear on those things at all, not directly and not by Gilgul Shavua? Or is it he doesn't have the right directly, but by Gilgul Shavua, once he's already bringing her to Beis Din to make her swear as a regular apotropa, maybe he can include these things.
That's it on another ground.
That's what we're saying. That's
Gilgul
Shavua.
Is another ground.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Are you saying that the chasum is the concept of dealing with the nochash? With Gilgul, you could...
Because maybe we could argue...
Gilgul here should work for everybody, right?
Right. So before we were saying that, yes, you could still say you're being so picky with me, so I can't live with you. But now that we slugged that up anyway, we anyway said that Rabbi Eliezer's argument, that the Ein Adam Darim Nachash B'Kfifa argument is a matter of Rabbi Eliezer saying you can do this any time, the Chachamim are saying you can't. So what is it? Are they saying you can do it sometimes, like Gilgul Shavua, or never? The halacha that's brought in Shulchan Aruch is never. You can't do it even by Gilgul Shavua. You can for him to bring her to Beis Din and make her swear al pil chavali sasa about her spinning or baking bread or what have you. Unless he has a tainus bari. If he has a tainus bari, if he has a definite claim that there's something missing, that's different. But just based on a shema, which is our case over here, I'm not certain what's going on, but I want to make you swear that he can't do even by Gilgul Shavua. Is the halacha have a chacham hold. And by the way, Tosfos brings from something that the Yerushalmi says in this connection, which the Rambam also brings as halacha, is for the same reason, because we want to promote shalom bayis, we don't want that there's always going to be this mutual suspicion between husband and wife, and at any time there can be, not at any time, but whatever, even by Gilgul Shavua, you can make her swear on household expenses. For the same reason, if she breaks dishes or household items or whatever, just in the course of doing the housework, she's potter. She's potter from paying, because again, you don't want to say what? Yeah. Well, it's not really Mesa Machmas Malacha, but you could have argued maybe she's a Shemachina, maybe you could argue she's a Shemachacha, but no, the Yerushalmi says if you do that, there's never going to be any Shalom bias in the house. She'll always be too nervous to do anything around the house because it might break, and therefore she's potter. Mishnah says, cost of law, what if the husband writes to her as follows? Or again, not necessarily writes to her, it can also include if he says it verbally and makes a kinyan or whatever. He says, neder shvur ein li alayich. I have no claim against you for a neder or for a shvur. Ein yachol ashpia, so he himself is not able to make her swear on any claim of his from then on. We'll talk about in the Gemara exactly what kind of claims we're talking about. But he still retains the right to make her yoshim swear. For example, if they're coming to collect, so for example, he divorced her, Rashi says, he divorced her, so he owes her a ksuba at that point. And she died, her yoshim yoshim the ksuba, that she was supposed to have gotten while she was alive. They have to swear that they're entitled to collect it, that our mother didn't tell us before she died that it was paid up, or there wasn't something that she was already given for it while she was alive, etc. So they would have to swear, so therefore he still retains the right to make them swear. He only said, I'm not going to make you swear. That's a point of reshus, and also he can make swear anybody who comes from her reshus, which would mean the case we've talked about the last couple of days, where she sold her ksuba to somebody else. Again, those people are coming to collect it after she was divorced and then died. They're coming to collect it. Same idea. The husband has the ability to make them swear the same thing that she didn't tell us before she died, that in fact the ksuba was paid off. What if he says, neder shvur in the alayich v'al yoshayich v'al aboim b'rshusich? What if he explicitly says, I have no neder or shvur, I have no claim for a neder or shvur against you, against your heirs, or against anybody who comes from your rishus? then any yochel ashbi alohi v'lo yoshev v'layas aboyim b'rshusa, good. Aval yoshev, mashbi anoysev, that's yoshev, that's aboyim b'rshusa. But his yoshev still have the right to demand such a shavua from her yoshev, etc. Same idea in reverse. So if he died, and now she's coming to collect her ksuba, or she died afterwards and her yoshev are coming to collect it, etc. And then they will have to swear. He said that he doesn't have any right to a shvur, but he didn't take it away from his heirs, etc. How about if he says neder shvur ein li v'lo li yoshai v'lo blad boim b'rshusi? He says neither I nor my yoshim nor anybody who comes from my rishus. What's who comes from my rishus? There's two different explanations here. Rashi says it means if he sells property, he means the third parties who bought property and who she might be coming to collect from afterwards. The Rambam says it means pashat people who he appointed as trustees, as managers of his property. So that's according to Rashi, it means that they're standing in my place, basically, because they bought the property from me, and now she's coming to be torah from them. And according to the Rambam, it means just people who are administering my affairs. So anyway, he says that. He says, Alayach v'ayoshayach v'alaboyim b'rshusich. Well then, eini yochel ashbi, lehu v'layoshav v'alaboyim b'rshusich, lehoysav v'layos yeshav v'alaboyim b'rshusich.
Somebody else.
So that's part of the issue. That's why you have this machloikas about what it means, whether Haboim Bershusi means somebody who I sold the other property to, right? Because according to the Rambam would take the view, how can you, you're saying you're not going to make her swear, fine, but how do you have the right to take away that, how do you have the ability to take away that right from somebody else who bought your property? Anyway, so in that case, he made it pretty explicit, so then he can't make her swear, his Yoshim or his Boim Bershusa can't make her swear, and they can't make her or her Yoshim or her Boim Bershusa swear. What about Holcha Mekeva Bible LeBeis Aviyah? What if now her husband patterned her from a Shavua, and now she went directly from her husband's grave, LeBeis Aviyah, back to her father's house? In other words, she did not take over managing the estate at that point. She just immediately went back to her father's house. Or she went back to her father-in-law's house, meaning back to the house where she and her husband lived. But she didn't become an apaturupa. So either way, the point is she's not actually doing anything with managing the estate. She left that to the Yoshim. And a Yoshim must be an Oisa. Well, then the Yoshim don't have the ability to make her swear because their father pastored her from a Shavua as long as he's alive. And after he died, she wasn't managing anything. Actually, we'll talk about the details of that in the Gemara. But right now, the assumption is that as soon as he died, she never did anything with the estate. So therefore, they have nothing to make her swear about.
Who took care of the estate?
The Yoshim. So therefore, they don't have the ability to say, but you know what, maybe while our father was alive and you were managing things, maybe you withheld something for yourself. No, because the father pastored her from that already. The imnasis apatrupia, but if she did at that point become a trustee, a manager, Hayoshim Nashbiyanois Allah Asid Lava, so the Yoshim are able to make her swear on the future, meaning anything that happens from after the burial, from when she became a trustee onward, then Mashbiyanois Al Mashava, but they still don't have the right at that point to make her swear on the past, on what happened while her husband was alive, because we're talking again the case where her husband pastored her from any such shavuos.
How on the future.
Shavua on the future. No, we don't. Not shavua on the future, as in I won't do. Shavua on the future, meaning in other words, she becomes an apotropia after her husband's buried. Instead of just going back home, she actually starts managing the estate. At some point after that, the Yoshim can make her swear. From then until now, have you been managing things honestly, or did you keep anything for yourself? By the way, when we say it near the beginning of the Mishnah, when we say neder or shavua, so shavua we can understand. Usually a person would swear that I dealt with things honestly or whatever. What's the case of a neder? So Tosfos refers to a Mishnah in Gittin that tells about you have a situation like this. The Amona is going to be collecting the silver from the Yoshim. Officially, the rule is whenever you collect from Yisayim, we talked about this the other day, you have to take a shavua. The problem was that she didn't previously collect from her husband, or that he didn't set aside something for it for her, etc. Yeah, what happened? There came a point there where people were afraid to make her swear because the consequences of a false shvuah are very, very severe, and therefore there was like a deadlock over there. She's not able to collect the ksuba without swearing, but they're afraid to make her swear in Beis Din. So Rav Gamliel Zaken made a takana that what she does is instead of a shvuah, she makes a neder. Meaning, they tell her basically, instead of a shvua that you didn't illegally take anything that you weren't supposed to, which that might be very hard to do. What during the entire time, I never once, you know, took one extra penny that I wasn't entitled to. It's hard for the average person. Instead, they tell her that make a neder, for example, make a neder that such and such will be also to you if you took even a penny. Fine, and then that, you know, it'll be also to you for 30 days, let's say, and then fine, she can take that neder, and she, just to be on the safe side, she won't eat that kind of fruit for 30 days or something, and that way, and then, and, but that'll be good, and that'll be a good enough basis for her to be able to collect her full ksuba.
Why can't she, before that she didn't make anything willingly, but mistakenly?
Because you don't do a shavuah like that willingly, mistakenly, or whatever. A shavuah is a shavuah, that I didn't take anything that I'm not entitled to. So like this, instead you do it via neder rather than a shavuah. But that's, in other words, that's the case that the Mishnah is talking about over here, neder. Okay, so you want to ask, shavuah maya vinta, what kind of shavuah are we talking about that a woman would ordinarily be chayev to her husband, that we're saying that the husband might pater her from? You're talking about a case where, like in the previous Mishnah, her husband, while he was still alive, appointed her manager of his estate. So then, he might well, as part of that, he might also write to her or tell her that I'm loichel any shvua, instead of, like the previous Mishnah said, I have the right anytime I want to take you to Beis Din and make you swear a shvua sakotrupos, instead I'm waiving that right. But the implication is that now there's another very common case, which we're now going to talk about, that a woman would have to swear, namely pegemes ksubasa, which we're going to talk about in the Gemara over here and in the next Mishnah. Namely, where a woman claims that I was paid my ksuba partially. The husband claims you received all of it, and she says I only received part of it. It's called pegemes ksubasa. In that case, she does have to swear. So what Rabbi Huda is saying is only the shvua sapatrupus is what we're assuming the husband was willing to waive over here, not the shvua pegemes ksubasa. No, he's willing to waive the right to a shvua sapatrupus, the shvua sashutvin, that we said in the previous Mishnah, that if he set her up as a manager, he arranged for her to be a manager of his property, then he's waiving the shvur that, fine, you won't have to swear that you didn't take anything of it for yourself. But if you end up being poigim ksubasa, that he's not necessarily waiving, for one reason, because the case of an apotropa, he made her an apotropa. So he's willing, so he's saying, I put you in a situation where ordinarily you'd have to swear, fine, I'm willing to waive that. Pegem ksubasa is something she puts herself in a situation where she claims that I was partially paid. So he might not be waiving that.
Didn't object.
Yeah, what do you mean, object? According to Rav Yehuda, when he says that I'm being moichel you a shavua, that's the shavua he means. The shavua is hapaturva, but not the shavua is pegemes ksubasa. Rav Nachman omer Rav Abavua al pegemes ksubasa, whereas Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Abavua that it means the shavua, pegemes ksubasa, which automatically then would include the shavua hapaturva, yeah.
Why would one
because if he's willing to be moichel the one for pegemes, how much more so the shavua hapaturva?
Much weaker.
Yeah.
No. Hapaturva is a new thing. But
pegemes ksubasa, where she says that I was paid part of it.
Right.
That's not a common. But pegemes ksubasa, there's more reason for her to have to swear. For
right.
One thing, because she got herself into that situation by accepting partial payment. Apotrupa, he appointed her.
But who is swearing about
pegemes ksubasa? She swears that she's entitled to the rest. He's claiming your ksuba was 200 and I paid the whole 200. She's saying the ksuba was 200 and I only got paid 100.
So a cousin will never let you off this one.
That's the point. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he wouldn't. According to Rabbi Nachman, if he's saying explicitly, I'm pottering you from a shvur, then it means that. Wait.
Why would you do it?
One second. Also, Rabbi Mordechai, why would he be Mordechai on that shvur?
Yeah.
Wait. Also, Rabbi Mordechai, Omer l'shmaita kamei de Rabashi. So Rabbi Mordechai went and set over this discussion to Rabashi, and he asked like this. I can understand Rav Nachman's opinion that he's being moichel the shvur of pegemes ksubasa, because why would he do that? Demaska daita, because he'll figure she may think sometime during her marriage, at some point during my marriage I may need money, and therefore I will take out some of my ksuba. I'll have my husband pay me some of that ksuba at that point. And therefore she realizes that might happen. Therefore, proactively she goes to her husband and says, write me out, please, a document stating that I won't have to swear later on if I want to collect the rest of it.
Well, that's all.
Yeah. On the rest of it.
The rest
of it. Yeah.
Why should I?
Well, in other words, Rav Mordechai's question is like this. If you say that that's when he was moichel, or I can understand why she would think to ask, that the husband is probably not doing, is not necessarily on his own saying, I'm pottering you from a shvur. It's she asked him to. In a case of pagemis tzubasa, fine, it makes sense why she would ask him to. Right at the beginning, she knows there's a good chance that sometime during the marriage that she may have to borrow against her, so take some of the money from her tzuba. Therefore, she asks her to begin with. But if you're talking about the case of an apotropos, does she even know when she first gets married that her husband is ever going to appoint her an apotropos, that she should even ask for such a thing, write out that I'm not going to have to swear in case you appoint me an apotropos? That's an uncommon case. She wouldn't even think about it. So according to Rav Yehuda, why would our Mishnah be talking about such an uncommon case? Well, I mean, the only possibility would be if after she was appointed an apotropa, she asked to be pastored from that shore. That's an unusual case. Why should we assume the Mishnah is talking about such an oddball case?
But even if it's a common case, it's a ksuba, why should husband ever ask him to it? Because he's a generous guy. I mean,
yeah, whatever it is, his wife talked him into it. No, yeah.
But not everybody is.
Obviously, if he wants to say no, then no, fine. But we're talking about that he's not by default. The point of the question is we're assuming that this document that your potter from a shvur was first done at the beginning when they first got married. When they first got married, she knows there's a chance that she may end up being pagemis tzubasa. It's a very far-fetched thing that she might end up being an apotropa. So that's the point of the question. But Nachman, we understand what the Mishnah is saying, that at the beginning of the marriage, what kind of shvur is she asking her husband, and the husband does her a favor and exempts her from, is something that she figures is likely to happen. But apotropa is not likely to happen. Why would Rabbi Huda be explaining that the Mishnah is talking about such an odd case? Amrle, so Rav Ashi tells him, it's not actually a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nachman. After Nahal Mas Nisula, you're learning the statement of Rabbi Yehuda as referring to the first part of the Mishnah, where it said, Neder Shvur Emi Olaich. And therefore you have the problem, why would Rabbi Yehuda understand the Mishnah in such a way? Whereas we, in our yeshiva, learn that Rabbi Yehuda's statement was referring to the later part of the Mishnah. Namely, we said if she directly went from her husband's grave to her father's house, meaning she never started managing the property, or she returns to her father-in-law's house and she doesn't become a manager, then the Yerushim can't make her swear. But if she became an apotropia, the Yerushim can make her swear on the future, but not on the past. Now, here comes the question, Rav Ashi is saying, the question that Rav Yehuda was trying to answer is, what do you mean to make her swear? What do you mean on the past? How far back does the past go? If the husband made a tnai, you're not chayev a shvur. How long is that in effect? Only until he dies, or until the funeral, or some later date? And on that, that it means only the apotropsis, only the managership that she did while her husband was alive. But the implication of the Mishnah is, and the implication of Rebbe's statement is, that after he died, anything that took place between when he died and the burial, that already, if she's managing property at that point, the Yoshim can make her swear that she didn't take any of it for herself. Or that she sold things at fair prices, etc. So that would be the point. It's not that Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda are arguing. The case of the first part of the Mishnah, where he says Neder Shvur Emi Olaich, is talking about Pagim Ksubasa, because that's the natural case that she would be asking her husband, pater me from the kind of shvur that I feel there's a high likelihood that I'm going to end up being in a situation that I need to. Later on in the Mishnah, when it's talking about that, if after her husband died, she started doing apotropsis, what we're saying is, even if she was an apotropa while her husband was alive and continued to be one after he died, what Rav Yehuda is saying is that anything that was during his lifetime, then she falter from, based on this statement, if he's moichel her, the thing of pogim ksubasa, for sure he's moichel her on the thing of apotropsis, but that expires as soon as he dies. Anything that happens after he dies.
After
for sure they can make her swear. That's obvious. But the point is, even what happened after he died, but before
that's
the kavura. Yeah. Okay. Ben Misa. Yeah, okay. Well, because the point is, because we have a machlokas on that. Rav Machna Amar, Afilu Ben Misa L'Kvura, Lo Mashbein Amar. No, Rav Machna says that no. As a matter of fact, anything between the Misa and the Kvura, you cannot make her swear on. That's why the Gemara had said Ben Misa L'Kvura in order to contrast it with Rav Machna. Why? It's true, Rav Machna says, technically what the husband said, I'm patuing you from the Shavua, expires as soon as he does, but we have a side issue. The Amri Nahadoi, the rabbis of Nahadoi say, L'kauga, when it comes to that you need to raise money for taxes, Rashi says it means taxes that the Yisoyimim owe, Tosfos argues it means the taxes that the woman herself owes. We're talking about, either way, we're talking about, kauga means head taxes, poll taxes, it's called in English. We're not talking about income taxes or whatever that depend on your income. Just every person, just for living in the country, you have to pay a certain amount of tax. It's called a poll tax in English. So kauga, l'mazoni, or when it comes to mazonis, for the almana herself, or for the children, ulakvura, or for burying the husband, or the yisaimim. All those things, we can sell property that belonged to the person who died without making an announcement. Usually you have to make a public auction. Usually when you're selling property that belongs to the Yoshim, to the Yisoyimim, in order to raise money for paying off debts or whatever, usually you have to go through a whole rigmarole, which includes you have to auction it off for 60 days or 60 days or a bunch of Mondays and Thursdays, whatever, and you give the exact measurements, you say how much it's worth, etc., and hope and then see whether people will outbid each other for it. These cases are very time sensitive. You need to pay the tax right away. You need to arrange for mazonis right away. You need to arrange for the person to be buried right away. Therefore, you sell without this announcement, without this public auction. And therefore, by the same logic, if the almana was handling the affairs of the estate between the misa and the kvura, same idea. Then we don't want to make her swear on what she did, because then she'll be afraid to do anything with it. I might end up selling it at a lower price than I should or whatever. Yeah. And by the way, we're not just talking about Tosfos says we're not just talking about, obviously, when we say the kvura, we don't mean obviously you're not going to go through a whole 2 month. Nobody would have thought that you're going to go through a whole 2 month auction and leave the body sitting there unburied. The point is that even if they borrowed money against the estate for the kvura, now after the funeral is done, now they need to deal with paying it back. Still the same idea. You don't say, well, now it's not so time sensitive. Buried is buried. No, you still say that you don't want to make it that you want to make it that people are going to be willing to lend out money on short notice like that in order that the funeral can take place quickly. Therefore, go ahead and sell the property as fast as you can without going through the whole hachrava process in order that you can pay off the guy. Well, that's the point. We're saying, therefore, we're not going to make this almana swear a shvua, even though Rabbi Yehuda had said that you do. Rabbi Machna is saying, true, in principle you should have to, but because of this idea, because these are time-sensitive things, and you want to make sure that she'll feel free to do it in a way that to get things done as quickly as possible, therefore, pater her from the shvua. And that's actually the point, right? Mefarshim say that even that's true. This din of Rav Machna would apply even if he didn't pater from a shvur. Yeah, there's an automatic exemption bein misa l'kvura. Yeah.
Because otherwise
she'd be afraid to get anything done, right? Yeah. Okay. Amar Rabba Amar Rav Chiya. If the husband writes to her deloy neder or deloy shvur, he says no neder and no shvur. Then it means who any yochel ashbiyav or yoshim ashbiyanoi. So that means he can't make her swear, but the yoshim can, like we said similar to what we said in the Mishnah. But if he says noki neder, noki shvua, if he says you're clean from neder and clean from shvua, ben hu ben yoshim ein ashbiyanoi. Then neither he nor the yoshim can make her swear. The fact that he didn't just say no neder and no shvua, he said clean or free from neder, free from shvua, implies they're saying, Rabbah is saying that it means he wants to go beyond the normal thing. It means he wants to bind his yoshim as well. Rav Yosef Amar Rav Chiya, whereas Rav Yosef says in the name of Rav Chiya, no, deloy neder, deloy shvua, then you're right, hu eni yochel ashbiyah v'yoshim ashbiyah noisa. But on the contrary, noki neder, noki shvua, on the contrary, if he says clean neder, clean shvua, bein hu, bein yoshim ashbiyah noisa, on the contrary, it means both he and the yoshim can make her swear. Why? What does noki neder, noki shvua mean then? Hacha kamala, naki nafshech b'shvuasa, because then what he means, not you, sorry, I skipped the line. Naki neder naki shvur ben hu ben yashin ein mashpir. Now, it's not according to Rav Baruchia. Hachakama lama nakisa mishvur. Because by saying naki, he's implying you're completely clean of any obligation to make a to make a shvur. So not just to me, but to anybody who comes from my koyach. That was Rabba, but Rabbi Yosef Amar Rabchia. Deloy neder, deloy shvur, yeah, hu eni yachal ashpi, abu yosh mashpi enoisa. But naki neder, naki shvur, ben hu ben yosh mashpi enoisa. Why hachakamela? Because then, what do we assume that he meant by the word naki neder, naki shvur? He means naki nafshech b'shvur. Just the opposite of what he said. Not you're completely clean from any obligation to a neder or shvur. On the contrary, cleanse yourself with a neder or shvur. If they suspect you, then I'm saying that you have a responsibility to cleanse yourself of any suspicion by making a neder or shvur, the case may be. So why would he write such a thing? Okay, so one possibility is that she asked him to exempt her from neder or shvur, and he didn't really want to for whatever reason, and therefore he wrote it in a way that misleads her to think that she's potter and really she ends up being chayav. Sholach Reb Zakeh Mar Ukva. Reb Zakeh sends Mar Ukva a message as follows: Bein de loy shvur, bein de noki. No, whether you write lo shvur or whether you write noki shvur, bein de noki shvur, bein de lo neder or bein de noki neder, whether you write no neder or clean of neder, then it means b'nichse hu d'ein yochal ashpia. Then it doesn't matter. Reb Zakeh is saying it doesn't matter really whether he says noki or whether he says deloy. The key thing is what the next word is. Does he say b'nechosai in my property? Well then, hu eni yochal ashpia v'yoshin ashpia noisa. Then it would mean he can't make her swear, but the yoshim can, because once he dies, it's not his property anymore. Or once he sells it, etc. If he says minachasaya ilain, but if he says from these nechasim, then it means the exemption from the neder or the shvur is tied to the nechasim. Therefore, ben hu ben yoshim ben mashpia noisa. Therefore, neither he nor his yoshim can make her swear. So it's three different opinions. Is it that Naki makes her exempt completely, or Naki makes her completely chayev, or is it depends whether it's tied to my nechasim or these nechasim? Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Mishmu Abba Shol ben Imam Miriam. But this Abba Shol ben Imam Miriam, by the way, apparently is not the same as the regular Abba Shol that we know from the rest of Shas. This is apparently a different one. So he says, Bein deloy shvur, bein denoki shvur, bein deloy nader, bein denoki nader, bein minichseir, bein minichsaya ilin, bein hu, bein yosha, bein mashpia noisa. So Abba Shol is a fourth opinion. Abba Shol ben Imam Miriam is actually a fourth opinion that no matter what kind of lashon he writes, whether deloy or noki, whether he mentions my nechasim or whether he mentions these nechasim, either way, bein hu, bein yosha, bein mashpia noisa, really neither he nor his yoshim should be able to make her swear. Avo ma'es, but Abba Shol says, but what can I do? Sharei amr chachamim, aboli parim nichsi yisayim lani parah ala b'shvur. Because the chachamim said that anybody who wants to get paid out of the nechasim of yisayim can only do it with a shvur. So Mefarshim discuss, is Abba Shol actually arguing with our Mishnah and saying that there's no way the husband can pater her from swearing to the yoshim, because you have the tachanas chachamim that you always have to swear when it comes to yoshim, or is he saying that only if he just mentions lashonis like we said over here, the lo shvur, naki shvur, etc., but he didn't specifically mention the yisayim, then we're saying the tachana that you have to swear to the yisayim overrides that. But if he would actually say in so many words, like we said in our Mishnah, that my yoshim are not allowed to make you swear, then yes, that would be effective. The halacha is like the we're going to say at the end of the sugya that the halacha is like Abba Shol, and the halacha is like that second understanding of Abba Shol, that if he explicitly says you're potter from a shvur to the assignment, then fine, she's potter from a shvur to the assignment. That overrides the takana.
In any other way, no.
But any other, if he just says the loy neder, naki neder, whatever, without specifically mentioning the assignment, then that's not good enough yet. The Ikadami Lamasnisa. Others say that instead of the first version was Reb Nachman had said it in the name of Shmuel, who said it in the name of Abba Shol, so it was just a teaching Baal Peh that was transmitted. The second version is that it's actually a Braisa. Abba Shol ben Imam Miriam, ben deloy shvur, ben denoki shvur, ben deloy nader, ben denoki neder, ben minachase, ben minachsai ilin, ben hu, ben yosha, ben mashpia noisa, then none of them are able to make her swear, avav ma'ese, but what can I do? Shayer machachama boli parim nichse seven lay paral b'shvur. The same thing, is just a difference of how was it transmitted. Was it transmitted as an oral teaching in the Mismedrash, or was it transmitted as a teaching of Amoroyim, who originally got it from the Tanoim, or is it directly as a b'raisa? Anyway, Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel, doesn't matter really.
No,
we don't know. There's two different versions. Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel, halacha ben Imam Miriam. The halacha is, in fact, like Abba Shol ben Imam Miriam, that Well, according to the two different explanations, again, according to one explanation, Abba Shaul is actually arguing with the Mishnah that as long as you use any of these Lashonis, you are potter from swearing to the Yisayimim. Or according to the second version, that no, he agrees with the Mishnah. If you didn't mention the Yisayimim, if you only used one of these Lashonis, then the Takanas Chachamim that you have to swear to the Yisayimim overrides that. But if you explicitly mention that you're potter from a Shavur to my Yershin, then she is potter from a Shavur to the Yershin.
So which version do we apply in Halacha?
So in Halacha we apply, that's what I'm saying, we apply the second one. Yeah. Mishnah says, Pagemes Ksubasa, let's see, Tara Elabishavur, if she's Pagem Ksuba, which the Mishnah will explain soon what it means, when we talk about it at the beginning of the Ovid, it means that she claimed she was paid part of Ksuba, whereas the husband is claiming he paid all of it. Well, if the husband claims he paid the whole thing, and she says that she only got part of it. Yeah, okay. Wait. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. She can only get the rest paid with a Shavur. Another, relax. Okay. Relax.
What
another case. What if one aide testifies that she was paid? Again, she's denying that. Again, let's part of the Shavur, then she can only get paid with a Shavur. On the face of it, it seems like the same idea. I mean, I told her one aid is contradicting you, you have to swear. We'll discuss in the Gemara, actually, the details of that. A third case, Minichsi Yisayimim Minichasim Shabbat, or third, fourth, and fifth cases, Minichsi Yisayimim, if she's claiming the Ksuba out of the property of the Yisayimim, so her husband died, and now she's claiming the Ksuba, or Minchasim Mishabadim, or she's trying to collect from the Chasim Mishabadim, from property that was sold to third parties, Vishalai Bafanav, or she's collecting the Ksuba when her husband's not around. In all those cases, also, let's depart out of the Shavur, in all those cases, she has to swear a Shavur in order to be able to collect. Hapagemis Tsubasa, Kate said, what does it mean, Hapagemis Tsubasa?
She says, I was told to my husband, I don't want to swear. Take your word for it.
Well, I mean, we said before that the previous Mishnah had mentioned Akosif, that he writes it. It doesn't necessarily have to be that he writes it. It could also be that he said it and made a Kenyan. But yeah, she'd have to have aid him for that Kenyan or something, yeah. Hapagemis Ksubasa Kate said, what does it mean, Hapagemis Ksubasa? Hoy Ksubasa Elef Zuz, suppose that her total Ksuba is 1,000 Zuz. V'amalai Skabal Ksubasich, the husband after he divorced her says, you've already received your Ksuba, so I don't owe you anything. V'hi Ametislai Skabal Tiela Mana, and she says, I only received a Mana, 1 out of 100 out of 1,000. Like you put out the shore, in order to collect, you have 900, she'll have to swear. Eidacha Mehidashi Pura Kate said, what does it mean that one aid swears that she's paid for? Again, the Ksuba is 1,000 Zuz. V'amalai Skabal Ksubasich, and he says, you paid off your Ksuba, I don't owe you anything. She says, I didn't. The aid echon me'idashi prua, nothing, right? But the aid echon me'idashi prua, but one aid testifies that she was paid off, then like part of the Shavur, then in order to collect everything, she can only do it with a Shavur. Menachasim Mishabadim Kate said, what do we mean from Menachasim Mishabadim? Macha Nachasim L'Achayrim, if the husband sold his property to other people sometime after he got married, but he nifras min alakuchas, and so now she's having to collect from those buyers because the husband himself or his estate doesn't have any capital left for her to collect from. L'Tipar El B'Shvor, same thing, she can only collect it with a Shvor. Rashi says the reason is that the reason is like this. It's like this, basically. If she was collecting directly from the loiver, and he wanted to say, you know what, you have to swear that I didn't pay you off already, then fine, we would accept that as a valid argument. But if he doesn't claim it, then fine, you didn't claim it, that's your problem. In the case when you have third parties who bought it, they can't know whether she was paid off or not. So therefore, it actually says it's a case of psach pichal ilim. Beis Din is responsible to open their mouth to the mute, meaning these people, the third parties, who have no way of knowing whether there's any possibility that she was ever paid off. Beis Din should effectively make that argument on their behalf. Make a shvur that you weren't paid off already before you go and collect from these people. Minichsi Yisayimim Kate said, what do we mean, Nichsi Yisayimim? Mes v'nich nechas of the Yisayimim, if he died and left his property over to the Yisayimim, v'hi nifras min Yisayimim, and now she's getting paid off from the Yisayimim. Again, like the part of the Shavur, she can only be paid off with a Shavur. V'shalai B'fanav Kate said, what do we mean if it's not in his presence? Halach lo'y l'medin siyam, the husband went overseas. V'hi nifras shalai B'fanav, and now she's getting paid the Ksuba, not in his presence. So we're talking about the Rif explains that he's more than 30 days away. Beis Din might send, if Beis Din should summon him so that he can actually be there and she can collect the ksuba from him. But if he's more than 30 days away, then he's entitled to collect the shleg upon him. Doesn't really matter. But the point is, he's away, and then during the time that he's away, he divorced her. Let's say, remember, before Chayav Ben Negoshim, he could divorce her unilaterally. Unilaterally, on his own, without having to have her permission. And in a fras, a bit shvur. So in that case, you can only be paid the ksuba with a shvur. Reb Shimon, cold man she tevas ksubasa. Any time that she's claiming her ksuba, hayoshin mashpiyanai. So then the yoshim can make her swear. But if she's not claiming her ksuba, ain't a yoshin mashpiyanai. So then the yoshim don't have any right to make her swear. Now, what case or this statement of Reb Shimon seems to be completely out of left field? What's that to do with the Mishnah? So we'll talk about later on. In the Gemara that we learn on Shabbos. We'll talk about the details. What Reb Shimon means by that. So the Gemara starts off. So the first case of our Mishnah, where we're saying that pagemes ksubos, where the husband says you were paid the whole thing, and she says I was only paid part of it. So sover Rami Bachama Mema Shvur Daraisa. So Rami Bachama thought to say that the shvur we're talking about over here in the Mishnah is a regular shvur daraisa, the regular case of moed b'mikta. It's a typical case where one person claims 200, the other one counterclaims I only owe you 100. Havila hadav mixes a tiny b'chalamoidu mixes a tiny yeshaba. That would be a shvur deraisa. What's the point if it's a shvur deraisa? So Rashi over here says the difference is if it's a shvur deraisa. We talked the other day about the concept of hipuch shvur. That if you have the person who's supposed to swear for whatever reason is not able to, for example, the choshu, the suspect of swearing falsely, then instead of making them swear, we make the other person swear, the opposite kind of shvur. Rashi says over here, a shvur deraisa, you don't do that. Only a shvur derabanan would you do that. Many Rishonim disagree with Rashi and on various grounds, and Rashi himself later on Peches explains differently, that if the Shvur Daraisa would mean that you'd actually be holding a Sefer Torah or Tefillin or a Chetz of Kedusha like that, as opposed to a Shvur Darabanan, you wouldn't. You wouldn't use Hashem's name, you wouldn't be using a Chetz, etc.
So Rashi said if you hold
a Sefer
Torah, then in that case you could.
No, so what Rashi is saying is that if it's, that the shvur, something where the Torah says you have to swear is where you'd be told to hold the Sefer Torah or what have you, as opposed to a shvur d'rabanan, you wouldn't. Yeah. Anyway, so that's what Rami Bachama thought to say. Amar Rava, shnei truas b'davar. So Rava says there's two. I can refute that in two different ways. Number one, all the cases in the Torah, there's three cases in the Torah where a person has to swear. All those cases are a person is being sued for money or whatever in Beis Din. They're swearing and they're being potter. There's never a case in the Torah where you swear in order to collect money. All the cases where you swear to collect are only derabanan. The Hidish Basra tell us this case in the Mishnah, she's swearing that I received only 100 and she's collecting the other 900. That's not Moedim Mitzvah. That's not the case of the Shavuot of the Torah. But Oid, Ein Nishbon, Akfidus Shivat Karkaris. And number two, we have a general rule. You don't swear on a case of denial, or in this case, partial denial, of a claim that involves Karka. When you have a Ksuba, the Ksuba creates a Shibud on Karka, that therefore she's entitled to collect from. We learn from various psukim, that we learn from the psukim that talk about the dinim of shavua and shavua shav and whatever, that it doesn't apply, that all the dinim, all the various dinim involving shavua only apply to metalpilin, not to karka. Therefore, anyway, there wouldn't be a shavua of moedim mixed with a taina over here.
Midyaraisa.
Such a
good answer was also that.
What?
Right.
I'll tell you in a second. So El Amar Rava, so no, Rava says the Shavuot that we're talking about over here is Midrabanan. Why is it? The Parah Dayak, the Mifra Lodayak. Because ordinarily the person who pays off is very careful about to know how much they paid off, to know how much they still owe. The Mifra Lodayak, usually the one who gets paid, is not so particular to remember exactly how much they got paid. The Rama Rabbanan Shavu Allah. So therefore, the Rabbanan placed the obligation of a Shavu on her in order that she should be careful, that she'll have to know that in the future she is going to have to swear the Shavu the Rabbanan. Therefore, when she gets the first 100, let her make a careful mental note of it, so that she won't so that later on when she swears, she'll be able to swear truthfully. And this way, if she knows, and this way, if she knows she has that obligation, therefore she'll make sure to remember it. So you're asking, how did Rami Bachama overlook such obvious things? So the Ritva says that that Rami Bachama didn't mean it's literally a Shvur Daraisa. He meant it's similar to a Shvur Daraisa. Rava, according to that, Rava misunderstood him thinking he's an actual Shvur Daraisa. But even so, you would say... Yeah, we're saying it's Rabbanan, but even so, the idea would be that Rabbanan made the Takana similar to the Din Daraisa, which we'll talk about soon. What the relevance of that is. That's one way. That flaw gives a different answer. That Rami Bachama took the view. We learned last week the idea. There's an opinion. Kala Omid Ligbus to Gavui Dami. That when you have a document that where the Chodivin is collectible, that's considered as if it's already collected. So therefore, the argument is effectively she's the Muchzak. The husband is the one trying to take the 900 away from her. So therefore, Rami Bachama wanted to argue that it is a typical case of Modim Mixus. And Rava tells him that no. Now they had a question as follows. What happens if she's claiming the partial payment, but she's also saying that I had Eidim? What's the din then? Do we say, Im Issa de Parah be'edim have a parala? Do we say, well, since obviously she was, she's careful to have had Eidim there for the first 100, then that shows that she would have been careful the rest of it, or he's careful, whatever. The point is that therefore if there's no Eidim on the remaining 900, then we can assume Ataka wasn't paid off, therefore we shouldn't have to make her swear. Maybe we just say no. It so happened she had Eidim over there and therefore she took advantage of it. But he wouldn't object to paying off the rest, not in the presence of Eidim. And therefore she should have to swear. Tashma, come, let's bring a proof from a Mishnah in Shavuos. Kol Shvoyin Shvatarin Shvoyin V'lo Mishamin. All the cases where the Torah says the person has to swear are cases, as we just said, where you swear and you potter. You potter from paying. For example, a Shomer is one case. Shomer is one case. I forget what the other two are offhand. The reason why we're bringing this in over here is it is, well, according to Rami Bachama, it's motive mixus. Rava is arguing it's not really a motive mixus, it's to make them be careful. The question is, the fact that there's Eidim over here make a difference. So we're going to bring a proof. This Mishnah is going to list that program Shtori Shaloi the Eidim, and we're going to make a deduction from that. Great. The Eilun Shmoyin Benotlin, the following are people who swear and are able to collect, which is all Midrabanan, Hasachir, a hired worker, so you hired somebody, you're claiming that you paid him, he says I never received the payment, then he gets to swear Midrabanan and collect his pay. We're not mentioning all. Not all these cases are relevant to our case. We're just quoting the whole Mishnah, or it's a Braisa, actually most of it is a Mishnah, and sure, it's the last quote, it's crucial to our part is a Braisa. The Mishnah is just listing them all together. Hasachir v'anigzol, somebody who was robbed. This is a case. Rashi says the case is that Reuven sees Shimon having come into his house. He says, "You stole from me. Give me back whatever you stole." Shimon denies it. There are Eidim. As Shimon was walking out of the house, there was stuff. He had stuff hidden under his coat. So Reuven doesn't absolutely know for sure that Shimon stole from him, but there's definitely reason to suspect. And therefore Reuven has to swear, and then he's entitled to collect from Shimon. The Gemara explains over there. The one is trying to get the stuff back. He's the one who swears. The Gemara points out over there has to be that he's Omud, as we talked about the other day. It has to be he's claiming something that we can reasonably assume that he actually had. He can't go and claim he stole from me, a hundred pounds of gold if we know that he's not that rich.
He doesn't have to prove that he's money.
No, so that's the thing.
He doesn't prove.
No, but that's these are the various on that. Yeah, van Nechval, a case of somebody who was wounded. Similar idea that a guy goes into somebody else's house and he comes out all banged up, all bruised up. He's claiming that he's claiming that the other guy beat him up. The other guy denies it. Same idea. He can swear and collect the. No, if I can't, the one who was beaten up gets to swear, Vinoito, and he's able to collect from the other guy. But again, there's a high likelihood, yeah. V'shekeneg v'choshed al shavua, another case is where the opposite party is suspected of swearing falsely, the case that we talked about before, Hibbuk Shavua. So you could have, for example, a case, let's say you have one person is claiming, let's say you have a case where, let's say one of these cases, for example, the Sachir is supposed to swear that he didn't get his pay, and then he collects. But if he can't swear because he himself is koshered, then instead you make the employer swear that he did pay him. Okay, that would be a bad example because then that's not noitzel. But okay, whatever. You have a number of cases where you would swear in order to be potter, and instead you're turning it around and the guy's swearing in order to collect. Yeah. So also the case of a storekeeper with his account books. This is a case the Mishnah discusses there in Shavuos, where an employer, for example, says to a local storekeeper, I'm employing people, I have to pay them. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open an account with you, and you're going to give them, whenever they come to shop at your store, you give them the stuff for free, and later on I'll square accounts with you. Eventually, what happens is the storekeeper says, in my account books it says I gave them X amount. The workers, on the other hand, claim that we didn't. We never shopped there. We didn't get that amount or whatever. What happens is, that both of them, the storekeeper and the workers, each swear that they collected, that they didn't collect the amount, that the storekeeper that he gave out the amount, the employees that they didn't get the amount, and then the employer actually has to pay both of them. Yeah. This is called chenveni alpin kalsi.
Why the workers getting paid? The company should get paid.
The chenveni has to get paid for what he laid out. The workers have to get paid because they have to get paid for their work. They're claiming we never got paid by going and shopping at the store.
And the two get.
Yeah. It's a long discussion in the Gemara why you make both of them, why you make him pay both of them, but anyway, whatever. Yeah, right, for our purposes, it's irrelevant. And here's the key one, v'apogim shtar, shaloi v'edim, if somebody has pogim his shtar without edim, which implies shaloi v'edim ein v'edim loy, which implies only because there were no edim do we make him swear in order to collect, but if there were edim, we don't. So that should prove our case. If she has edim, that she got the original 100, then we shouldn't make her swear the other 900. The answer is loy. The answer is loy mebaya kamar. No, actually, what the price might mean is needless to say. Loy mebaya be'edim. Needless to say, if the person is claiming that I got paid, that I got partially paid, and there were edim devadei tzricha shvua,
right,
then for sure you need a shvua because the fact is there are no edim on the rest of it. So you have to make him swear in order to be able to collect. You can't just let him collect the rest on his own.
Why can't you?
Right. Avol shaloi be'edim, but when it comes to if there are no edim, your question, aim it to heavy k'meshav aveda, you would think maybe the person should be considered like a meshav aveda, because what's happening over here, you have a shtar saying that she has a shtar, tzuba, that says she's owed 1,000. She herself is voluntarily claiming without edim that she already received 100. Maybe it shouldn't be considered meshav aveda, so she's returning a lost object. Like she could have claimed, in fact, not really a matter of migrate, but she could have claimed that I didn't get anything and that I'm owed the whole 100. The tishkob l'shvur, therefore you would think that she can collect without a shvur. Kamash malon, that's the chiddush, that no, you still do need to swear in that case. But you can't prove from that even if there are edim, you can't prove whether you should also have to swear or not. Actually, it's the other way around. If there were edim on the first 100, then there's no question. There's edim on the first 100. She has no migrate. There's for sure no migrate in that case. She can't possibly deny that she got that 100. Because there are edim. So then there's no question she has to swear on the other 900. In the case where she doesn't have edim, you would think it's considered meshav aveda, again, given what we said before, that the person who gets paid is not usually so particular to know how much they got paid, then nevertheless we're still going to make her swear on the rest of it in order that she'll be more careful to know how much she gets. On the basis of the amount. Yeah, no, because we're saying we don't consider it meshav aveda. We don't consider it meshav aveda. We don't give a migri. We say that in order to make sure that takanas chachamim, in order to make sure that you're going to be careful to know how much you got paid, therefore we're going to make you swear. That's what we're just saying, because the Takanas Chachamim is we don't want to allow you a migur in that case because the usual assumption is somebody gets partially paid, they're not sure how much they got paid. They don't think to keep track of it. Yeah.
In that case, the amount has to be precise, so we cannot give her any.
Right. Yeah.